Welcome to Saints History, told and experienced the way God intended it, with excessive amounts of alcohol and cursing. The booze is probably bourbon because...
Other alcohols are for rich women on diets.
Now, here's your drunk Saints History host, who is...
bombed out of his gourd.
All right, welcome to another episode of Saints Drunk History. I'm already messing things up. We are joined by one of my favorites. He's my guy. We did an episode last year, the 2011 Saint. So this year, we're doing Joe Horn. He's my guy, Scott Prather, 1420 ESPN Lafayette. He's program director, brand manager, all that. He has a great sports talk show on Lafayette. He's my guy that I get him. I listen to him on part of my drive home because it's so long. In Houston, Scott, people can find it on the interwebs. They can find your show and get it. I can get it on my phone, so they can get it. You're great. We did 2011 last time. This time we're doing Joe Horn. I'm drinking Jack Daniel's honey. I know people on my Twitter feed hate it, but I'm drinking it over ice, people. What do you want me to do? Scott, what are you drinking tonight?
I just went to Circle K and picked up a cheap 32-ounce beer in a can.
Yes.
But I'm doing it.
It's the way to go, man. Cheap beer, as Anthony Bourdain, rest in peace, said, as long as the beer is cold, it's good. So look.
Hell yeah, and it's still cold. It might not be cold by the end of this, but it's cold right now.
So we decided we'd do a player. We're going to do Joe Horn. And Joe Horn is, he's got, like, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. Me and Scott were kind of bullshitting before we started recording. Like, Joe Horn has so much, and you forget about it. Scott, this may be two parts, I don't know. But the interesting thing about Joe Horn, even before he got to the Saints, like, his story is crazy. Like, he didn't get good. He played at junior college. He didn't play football for 2 years. He rented a Jerry Rice video at Blockbuster and looked at it, and then, like, did a bunch of training moves and, like, sent out a video, and, like, a CFL team signed him. You know, so his story is just is unique and could almost be like a NFL, like a Lifetime movie of the week. It's so unbelievable.
It really is. You know, he spends less than $4 on this Jerry Rice workout video from Blockbuster, signs with a CFL team, but it was the team in Shreveport whenever they had like four teams in the U.S. in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And the guy is such an incredible athlete. That's where he got his start. But you're right. I mean, you think of Vince Papale, you think of
the Shreveport Pirates.
Not enough people talk about Joe Horn and like how crazy his break into football was.
Yeah, like, and then he, like, he was traded to the Memphis Mad Dogs, which sounds like a team on an HBO football series, First and 10 from the 80s, if you're really old. But he played good in Memphis. He had 71 catches for 1,400 yards. He goes to the Chiefs, and he's kind of like just like a special teams dude, and he played 4 years. The thing about Joe Horn is, people, and I had forgotten this, is, like, you know, the Saints signed him for 4 years, $10 million, and like, this is before, you know, 2000, like, it was before the internet, so they had, like, message boards, but, like, ESPN.com and all these sites, you know, like, they didn't have, like, dedicated football writers to, like, rip it to shreds or whatever. It was kind of like, at the time, it was like, the Saints signed who the fuck for 4 years, $10 million? What are they doing? This dude, what are they doing, you know? And it kind of like, people didn't rip it, but they didn't really understand it, because at the time, he was 28, and his best year was 35 catches, you know? So, it was a weird signing, but the Saints had, like, that new car smell where they had Randy Mueller and Jim Hazard, so it didn't get banged on too much because it was all new, right?
All of it, right. You're, like, rock bottom at the end of the Ditka era. I mean, the team is just shit. And... they only had, you know, I think 18 or 19 holdovers from the 99 to the 2000.
And they signed
all these new guys.
They signed that free agency period was nuts because the Saints under Ditka, the one thing Ditka didn't do was he didn't spend money because Kuharik just wasn't aggressive. So they had a ton of cap space. They signed a dude at one point. They signed a dude, I want to say, like every day for like 9 straight days, which is just fucking crazy. So it kind of got like not like lost in the shuffle, but a little bit because they signed Blake and Norman Hand and Jake Reed and Glover and a ton of guys on defense, right? So people are just going nuts. And he comes in, dude, and the thing about Joe Horn, Scott, was like he was good fucking instantaneously. Like it wasn't like a process where it took him a while. It took him a couple games. Like, he was awesome day one with the Saints.
He was, and he was the least talked. They had, you mentioned Jake Reed. That was the name fans recognized. They drafted a guy named Sherrod Gideon, a receiver out of Southern Miss. More people were talking about Sherrod Gideon in that training camp than Joe Horn. And you mentioned it. The guy comes in right out the gate, and I think what endeared himself to the fans so much, I mean, the Saints were just, they were such shit in the Ditka era. And here comes this guy with the nickname Hollywood that he got in Kansas City, who likes to wear these, you know, flamboyant outfits. He's got this style, but he talks so much trash. And like, when you first get to the Saints and they haven't been good for a while and you got this guy talking trash, you're like, well, Randall Hill did that, you know, and he would wear a Superman shirt, but like, no one, you know, how good was he really? And Horn just, he keeps talking and talking, and then he keeps backing it up. And then they start winning. So suddenly it's like, damn, our team is good, and we've got this braggadocious receiver that talks trash and can kick ass and is a Pro Bowler. Like, the timing of his first year with the Saints was really a match made in heaven. And I think for a lot of fans just wanting to latch on to the Saints and, oh, my God, they're actually good, Joe Horn, you know, while more people remember Brooks and, you know, Blake's injury, Horn was, you know, arguably the most integral part of that new era.
It was fun. And Horn was good. Like, the second they played the opening game in the first week, and they were terrible against Detroit. They go to San Diego, and San Diego had Ryan Leaf. Joe Horn fucking catches 12 for 116 and 2 touchdowns, including the game winner with like 15 seconds left. And I remember him in the post game. He's like, I told you motherfuckers, we are going to be good. I'm going to be good. This is not a one time. And people were like, who is this dude? And the thing is, you couldn't say anything to him because he just caught the game-winning touchdown pass, and he caught 12 for 116. But I remember, like, people were like, this dude is whack. Like, he's on the Saints. Like, he needs to, like, tone it down. And it was like, he was like that this whole time. And it, like, never stopped. And that 2000, like, he was good from the jump. And, like, the first year, I mean, you know, he catches 94 for 13, 40, and 8. And just, you know, with him and Aaron Brooks, it was pretty. But him on the end of the Jeff Blake, like, rainbow
ball. They had a connection, man.
Was just,
they had a connection.
I'm not saying Blake was better than Breeze, because that's just ridiculous. But as far as, like, a pretty ball, Jeff Blake probably threw the prettiest pass I've ever seen a quarterback throw. Like, his deep ball was just it was just fucking majestic. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it wasn't that he threw hard. It wasn't that he had this giant arm or whatever. It just was like a raindrop out the sky.
And Joe Horn was the go-to target. I remember the win in Chicago when they just demolished the Bears, and Cade McCown is, you know, threatening to slap Joe Johnson in the face. And Joe looks at him like, dude, you don't want to do that. And Horn's catching these deep balls and these touchdowns, and he is just rubbing it in their face. And as a Saints fan, at that point in time, Ralph, you know it. I mean, the Dome Patrol era was a lot of fun, but it's not like
it was
like
a long time ago, like 2000.
Players.
Yeah.
Right. It had been a while, and you didn't have these offensive players that were just so good and would rub the other team's face in it. As a Saints fan at that point in time, you're so used to that happening to your team all the time, and now you've got this guy that wants to rep the Saints, and he embraced the fans. The fans embraced him, and you know, this is a time where receivers, you know, they kind of got coined, you know, diva receivers in the early 2000s. You had a lot of big personalities, right? And for some receivers, they could have a big personality, and the team, you know, the teammates, they weren't crazy about them. I mean, that wasn't the case with Joe. Like, he was the kind of guy, and I've talked to some of his former teammates. He ain't no denying. Guy loved the limelight. Okay, he loved the cameras. He spoke himself in the third person. He loved it, but when he wanted his teammates to succeed too. So, if anything, you know, nobody on the team was going to discourage him from being him. And it was the beginning of that marriage, that 2000 season between Joe Horn and the Saints. It was so perfect. And you know, the win in the playoffs, I love. I mean, it's one of my favorite moments all time. Well, and Willie Jackson went off. But, God, Joe Horn gets hurt on the first play. Like, what could he have done in that game had he stayed healthy? We'll never know.
He would have burned the Rams to the fucking ground. But even before that, like, I'm going through these games now as I'm drinking. And you, like, the thing about Joe Horn is we knew he was great, but his antics overshadowed it. And we'll get to some specific things. But, like, that 2000 team, they won the playoff game. They won and it was great and all that. But that team, before the injuries hit them, and Blake got hurt and Ricky Williams got hurt, they played San Francisco. To get that, it won their six in a row, and they demolished San Francisco. And I remember after the game, Buddy was like, I know what you people are going to think I'm crazy and I'm a squirrel, but I'm telling you, the Saints can win the NFC. And that game against San Francisco, Joe Horn had fucking 10 catches for 180 and a touchdown of 43 yards. And that Saints team, granted, San Francisco was terrible, but they cut through San Francisco, and they even had a thing where they went for it at, like, their own 30-yard line pissed off San Francisco, and they asked Joe Horn after it. He's like, whatever, stop us. This ain't the old – I forgot what he said. He said something about the old Saints that just rolled over for San Francisco. He's like, those days are dead, baby. And I remember being like – fucking A. Yeah, damn right. Because sometimes, Scott, when you're losing, you need that dude to, like, interject the team and the city with, like, no. The losing is fucking done with. And he and Joe Horn was that guy. And, it, like, you know.
The timing was perfect. He was that guy. And the fan base loved him. He loved the limelight. He loved the fan base. And, he didn't have mental errors in games. Like, you talk to guys that play quarterback for the Saints, and he was their teammate. They're like, you could count on Joe. Like, he would showboat. He would kind of, you know, showboat in practice and shit. Yeah. But you knew, like, when it came down to it, in the thick of it, you could count on him to go out there and make the play. And so that balance of being that flamboyant, strong personality, and also being the good teammate and being this magnetic guy that talks shit, that was really good at that position, which is just full of strong personalities in the league, the timing was impeccable. Like, the Saints needed Joe Horn at that point in time as much as Joe Horn needed the Saints.
Well, and he was a good teammate. The thing is that was weird was after 2001 –
yeah. Like, that was weird.
That was weird because the Willie Rolfe rumors come out, and, like, the Saints don't address it, and it's just swirling everywhere. And Willie Rolfe got traded to Kansas City, and Willie Rolfe, when they traded him to Kansas City for, like, a third or a fourth round pick. And at the time, Willie Rolfe was the best left tackle in football.
It's the reason that Willie Rolfe didn't spend his entire career with the Saints, and he continued his Hall of Fame All-Pro career in Kansas City. It was a weird deal, and yet, I remember leaving a game where the Saints got their ass whooped. It might have been the game to Washington on a Sunday night late in the season when they were already out of the playoffs and just getting embarrassed. Right, this is a one, and I remember, like, leaving the game, and fans are talking about this. Like, a bunch of fans just openly, like, oh, yeah, I heard this, and Joe Horn impregnated Willie Rolfe's wife and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you hear fans talk about it. Well, a month later, you know, the Times-Picayune's running this story with these questions. And Willie Rope, you know, here's Brian Alley Walsh's piece in the Times-Picayune from January 26, 2002. Let me read a little bit. Here we go. New Orleans Saints left tackle Willie Rope emerged from months of silence Thursday, saying malicious rumors about his personal life might prevent him from continuing his career in New Orleans. Rope, a seven-time Pro Bowl selection, one of the team's most popular players, missed half the 2001 season, undergo knee surgery, blah, blah, blah. Team officials have made Rope, who will turn 32 on April 18th, available to the Houston Texans in the expansion draft. And then lastly, here's the quote from Willie. As you know, my marriage with Michelle has been on a roller coaster for a while. I don't know about all the rumors, but I do know what people are saying about Joe Horn and me. I talked to Joe Horn about it, and Joe said he didn't know Michelle. Michelle said she didn't know Joe. The baby looks like me. Long feet, long hands. She's a big girl, but I did take a blood test. We had it done a couple of weeks ago, so I'll find out the results shortly, but I feel comfortable the child is mine. I mean, that's January of 2002.
Scott,
and Joe
if
Horn
that happened
an article.
If that happened today, as I sit here and drink, dude, it would not only would it melt Twitter, like ESPN and like national news, they would be down in New Orleans, like covering that. It might be on CNN. Like it might be a story that like breaks through the sports bubble and like goes out into like regular news. That shit is crazy. And in 2001, like, it was crazy, but it was, like, self-contained in the New Orleans because
yeah.
the media wasn't
Dude,
this...
I called, like I was in college, and I heard some, like, you know, the middle of the night, 1, 2 in the morning, some national talk show on Fox Sports Radio, and they were talking about the Saints, and I, like, called to, like, bring up this thing that had been reported in the paper, and like, oh, no, you can't talk about that. It's like, today... They would do whole segments on it. Here's a quote from Joe Horn on ESPN.com. We make mistakes sometimes, but that is one mistake Joe Horn did not make. I did not sleep with Willie Rope's wife. So he's speaking in the third person.
Joe never goes. He never doesn't go third person.
Willie Rope's wife. Yeah.
See, if Joe Horn had said I didn't sleep with Willie Rope's wife, then I'd have been like, yeah, he slept with her. But because he kept in consistency and was always third person, I believe him.
Yeah, and you know, the more that came out about that, Ralph, it, crazy enough, in the end, it did in fact look like nothing happened. Like it didn't happen. Now who knows if he knew her or didn't know her, but it was a big enough rumor to, it was a big enough rumor to have arguably the second best player in the history of your franchise get traded for, you know, for
nothing.
For peanuts.
For peanuts.
Yeah.
For nothing.
And even though it didn't happen. So they had to talk it out. Joe Horn, you know, it's to say like I've heard people say he was a good teammate, and they've said some other things about Joe, which I'll get to later, but, you know, in talking to people that were there at the time, they all said it was crazy. It was a rumor. And, you know, but there were never any altercations. It didn't
well, one
happen.
Thing too
so
is,
this is a thing of fans taking something and running wild with it. But as you said, early 2000s, I mean, these are people talking. This is let's call in to, you know, the point after. Well, I don't know. Who knows if anyone called in with it there. But let's just talk about it today. It would. Even though it wouldn't be true, in the perception of it in fans' eyes is that somehow it'd be true, and there would be signs, and away teams would be heckling the guys about it. The fact that it happened back then, let me read you a few more quotes from Rope. I can't sit here and say I'm an angel. I haven't had a good track record with women anyway. Some of this is my lifestyle starting to catch up with me. I haven't had a vasectomy, but I do plan on having one.
Scott,
Haslett had to answer questions about it at the Senior Bowl. Right? Here's a Haslett quote. I've never been in a city like New Orleans where rumors have swirled like this. It's a shame that radio talk shows can get away with promoting what amounts to nothing more than gossip and rumors. It hurts families. Kids hear it, wives hear it. It's not right. We all knew there was nothing to it. Joe wouldn't do something like this. He's not that type of person. It's a shame that Willie didn't come out earlier and dispel these rumors. So Haslett calls out Rope for not coming out and
yeah,
saying,
like,
well, I mean, the guy got a blood test. Like, he obviously had some other stuff happening he wasn't sure about.
Yeah.
And here's Haslett at the Senior Bowl throwing Rofe under the bus.
Yeah, like, Haslett handled that awfully. Like, if there was any, I mean, probably. Look, with all the stuff that was swirling around in New Orleans, Willie Rofe probably just was like, I want to get the fuck out of here. And it was right for him to want to just like, look, I'm having trouble in my marriage. I gotta get out and I gotta start anew. But Haslett's handling of it was just terrible. Like, Haslett made it to where there was no possible way it could have gotten fixed and Willie Rofe could have stayed. Like, Jim Haslett just hit, like, I don't know how he could have handled it any worse, but it was close. Like, just you know. It's
the part of the Joe Horn story that to this day some people reference as if it's true, and it isn't. But you're talking about two of the most decorated and popular players in the history of the franchise, and a rumor that wasn't true caused one of them to be traded for nothing. And in all honesty, as great as Joe Horn's career was, Willie Rofe was better.
No, it's nuts. Willie Rofe made two all-decade teams in the NFL first team. He made the 90s all-decade team, and he made the 2000s all-decade team for the NFL. That's how fucking good Willie Rofe was. So, but back to Joe Horn, like the thing was with Joe Horn, like, for whatever it was, man, like, it didn't slow him down. Like, in 2002, he went for 1,312 yards and 7 touchdowns, caught 88 balls. 2003, he gets hurt, and the thing that I knew it, but I didn't realize it until you look back is, even though Joe Horn, he'd only played for the Saints for 3 or 4 years, when he's doing all this and having these 1,300 yard years, it's all in his late 20s, early 30s, Scott. Like, he's dropping his best years after he turned 30, which I know. Players stay in great shape now, and it's more likely guys can be good in their 30s. But for a receiver, it's still not guaranteed that once you hit 30, you don't decline. Look at Dez. Look, I can name a bunch of receivers that were great even in today's game that they turned 30. It goes downhill. Man, Horn, 28, 29, he was just getting started, which is just crazy to me.
It is. Some would say, well, maybe there's not as much wear and tear on the tires. But here's what's nuts, Ralph. He could have done it even longer. So here's something that a lot of people may not know about Joe Horn. You know, you've got some of these players that are so particular about their diet, right? I mean, Drew Brees wrote about it in his book.
Yeah.
He went to some dietitian, learned things, and realized, oh, now I can have all this extra energy and I can extend my career. Blah. Joe Horn did not have a good diet, right?
No.
He would eat whatever the fuck he wanted. He did not, like, his diet was awful. And yet, he was chiseled. He was an elite Pro Bowl wide receiver. I mean, in 2004,
players
he was 6 yards behind Masin Muhammad for leading the league in receiving yards. I mean, he was so good. And, you know, 4 Pro Bowls in what, 7 seasons with the Saints, and in 4 in a 5-year stretch, he, like, if he had taken care of his body from a diet standpoint, I bet you he could have played well into his mid-30s. Like, he could have kept playing with the Saints, and we would have never had that awful, you know, one season he had to play for, you know, the team that blew a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl.
You want to hear something crazy? I got a funny story. Kenny Wook, when I worked for Buddy D at WWL, Joe Horn had a show.
The
at a
Joe
steak.
Horn Show. I produced it sometime. There were some weeks I had to produce it.
It was at a steakhouse. Right? I can't remember the name of it.
I was never there. I was always back in the studio trying to tell people that called in that didn't want to ask a question. They just wanted to say, I just want to tell Joe he's the man. And I had to tell him, sorry.
It was at a steak.
We can't put you through for that.
It was at a steakhouse, and Kenny Wilkerson had me go out there. I had to do, like, so just some minor stuff for Kenny.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, Kenny, after the show, he was like, hey, Ralph, me and Joe are going to eat, sit with us and eat, and it's all comp, so I got a steak. Joe Horn, Scott, I kid you not, he got two, like, 12-ounce fillets, like two sides and a salad and like bordelaise sauce, destroyed it. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe what I'm this. I mean, Joe Horn is a chiseled dude and he was buff and all that, but he's not
his
like, he wasn't like a super big guy. He wasn't like a,
must be the most incredible thing ever.
And
ever. I mean,
players used to joke with him, dude. They're like, when you retire, I'm going to see you in 10 years and you're going to weigh like 300 pounds. And Joe Horn would be like, we'll see.
Still looks great.
But like, he still looks good. Like some people do, they just, I don't know if he's got like a thyroid issue or whatever, but that dude, he just could kill food. But the funny thing about Joe Horn is like, I feel like all his antics and his fun, like it overshadowed everything. Like, you remember the soundbite in, I think it was 2003, right, is one of the things that he's most famous for nationally, right? Like the cell phone celebration. Like
right.
T.O.
Right.
T.O. had done the Sharpie, and Joe Horn did the cell phone, right? And it was a giant spectacle, and, you know, T.O. said, oh, you copied me, and blah, blah, blah. The Saints won that game 45-7.
I was there. I mean, they crushed them.
But here's the thing. Like, it probably overshadows maybe, I think you can argue, the greatest game by a Saints receiver that's ever been had. And it was Joe Horn.
Statistically, it was incredible. Statistically, he couldn't be stopped.
All they remember is the cell phone, right? He caught 9 for 133 and 4 fucking touchdowns. And I bet you 99% of Saints fans, if you ask them Joe Horn's best game, they don't remember that. You say, what did Joe Horn do the night he pulled out the cell phone? Saints would be like, I have no fucking clue. And it's I think you can argue that it's the greatest game by a Saints receiver in the history of the team.
And yet, no one will remember. They'll just, that Sunday night game was really, so that was, I think that was the week before the River City Relay, and, you know, John Carney officially knocked the Saints out of the playoffs, even though they wouldn't have got there anyway. But that's on a Sunday night. Jesse Palmer, before he was the bachelor, the quarterback.
Yeah, he's not. I looked at the stats.
And if I remember correctly, I think they might have run out of tight ends in that game. And so many of their formations were just, they had to change the playbook. Like entirely, and they're up by a lot. But if you remember, they're up by a lot, but they keep throwing. And essentially, Aaron Brooks and the receivers dialed up a bunch of plays on the sidelines in that game, which is, you know, this crazy. Is the NFL. I mean, you like to,
yeah.
you like to
they have
the,
you
the
you
time,
you you have a you have an incredible memory, because I'm looking at the box score. They have no tight ends catching a ball.
There you go.
Aaron Brooks, 26 of 35, 296, and 5 touchdowns.
There it is. I mean, a Payton caught this one. He, like, dove into the end zone. So, because they had to – but I still think it's like you had to change the formation. But when you're up by, like, you know, 30, you don't have to keep throwing it. Like, you could still run the ball. But, McCarthy, was he still the OC at the time?
Yeah.
I mean, he essentially let them – just do what they wanted in the passing game. And the Giants, you know, I mean, who knows? They're getting their ass whooped. Maybe the DBs didn't care. It's late in the season. It's prime time.
Yeah.
I was at that game, and I remember them. Like, this wasn't just your tip route. This wasn't your typical, hey, you know, let's look at some photos on the sideline, and you're up by 30. You know what I mean? And they're over there, and they're talking to each other. And then I heard a little birdie told me later, yeah, once they lost the tight end, they threw the game plan out, and when they were up big, they just let the guys do what they wanted. So they just kept throwing the ball, even though they were up by a ton.
Oh, goodness me.
This is good drunk Saints history.
It
right
is.
Here, folks.
It is.
You only get this shit on this podcast, right?
Yeah. I can't remember. I have trouble remembering my own birthday, but like Saints history, I'm golden, right?
Here's some other tidbits about Joe Horn that a birdie told me about. It was okay. This guy was was he wanted his teammates to succeed. He had a good heart, right? He was magnetic.
Yeah.
He would always wear a different, like, he loved to go into the locker room last on game day because he always had a different outfit. It might be a three-piece suit. It might be some weird camo swag, but he always wanted to be the last one in there because he knew the guys, you know, they ate it up. They would react to it. He was a Pro Bowler, but he could have been a multi-time All-Pro because guys like Joe Horn liked when people would call him out, not for being this flamboyant, strong personality. Like no one really got too upset about it because he showed up and he wanted his teammates to succeed. But Aaron Brooks, for as perhaps underappreciated as he is amongst many in the fan base, wasn't the best leader. Like, he didn't call out Joe Horn on shit, and Jim Haslett didn't either. So sometimes in practice or whatever it might be, like, Joe was like that kid when you talk about, you know, the diet, and he was that kid in school, Ralph, that, okay, he's just really smart. He doesn't even really need to study. I mean, look, you can count on him. He's going to make A's, but he doesn't, you know, if he studied harder, maybe he could be valedictorian, right? Like, that was Joe Horn, the player, and nobody on the team, like at least the leaders at the top, because Joe Horn kind of was the guy. And I think a lot of the teammates wanted him to be that guy that not only called out other players on their shit when they weren't, you know, getting it together, but also could get called out on shit maybe when he wasn't putting it all in. So you have this weird – it's not like he – again, what I've been told is he was a good teammate, but he was a Pro Bowl player, a good receiver that could have been maybe the best in the league if he had that second level, right? Whether it be the diet, whether it be calling out all teammates, all of that. Like,
those Haslett teams, like, they were aching for a leader, right? Because Aaron Brooks, he wasn't the best player on the team, and he wasn't a leader. Like, your quarterback doesn't necessarily have to be the best player in your team, but if he's not the best player on your team and he's not the leader, that's a bad combination. So there was always, like, this void. And Joe Horn would, like, try to fill it, but it wasn't his nature, right? I remember, like, in 2004
wanted him to do it more. I think the players wanted him to do it more because he had that respect, but he just...
But he didn't know how. Like, I remember, like, he was, like, when the Saints were losing in 2004 and they were terrible, like, before they went on the winning streak, Joe Horn was like, I got so upset and I was driving around looking for Aaron Brooks' house to talk to him and I couldn't find his house. And Buddy D was like, you don't know where your teammate's house is? Like, and you're driving around looking for him? Like, that's weird. And yeah, but it's like totally Joe Horn. Like, yeah. Like he like wanted to be the leader and tried to be the leader, but he didn't know how to pull it off. But he knew that, like, somebody had to do it. But, like, it just wasn't like Joe Horn's, like it just wasn't his person. Like, Joe Horn was the guy that's like, I'm gonna come to work, I'm gonna work my butt off, I'm gonna sing, I'm gonna dance, I'm gonna be awesome. But I'm not really going to lead. And, like, there's a lot of people like that. There's a lot of people, like at work, and you probably know people at your job or whatever. They come to work, they're dependable. You're like, maybe I wish he would do this, I wish she would do that and be doing this. But they just, like, can't, or they don't want to, or they don't know how. And, like, that was Joe Horn. Like, he was great at being a receiver, but he just, like, wasn't a leader. Like, but, like, kind of like Colston, but, like, the Colston was the polar opposite, where, like, Colston never said anything interesting ever in his whole time with the
Saints.
He didn't
have to be. Like, the, you know, Peyton's teams have had, well, not every year, but most years they've had some strong leadership. And Joe was, man, we're talking about, you know, some of the things that he could have done better. But overall, you know, for him to spend, even though it was only 1 year, Ralph, for him to spend 1 year with the Falcons and still be a, for the most part, beloved member of the franchise all time, that says a hell of a lot, because that's one thing, man. It's hard to forgive that, you know, even though, look, they offered him a contract. The Saints kind of had moved on, like, financially. Last time I interviewed him, I gave him shit because I told him my mom owned his jersey, and he was like, oh, man, your mom's awesome. And then I was like, well, yeah, but she got rid of it when you joined the Falcons. He's like, oh, he's like, I hope she didn't. I don't remember what he said. I'll send you the audio, but it was. Well, he's like, oh, she doesn't blame me. I just, you know, they offered me a contract.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing with Joe Horn. Like, it didn't end well with him. And you talk about your mom. My mom. I go to the games with her too, and she loved Joe Horn too. And I always believed in her thing. You know it. Joe Horn, he was injured in 2006. He started getting injured. He was in decline. And the Saints went to the playoffs, and they won in Philadelphia. He didn't play. He desperately wanted to play in that Chicago game. And he felt like he was healthy, and Sean Payton didn't play him. And from people that I know, like they said it broke Joe Horn's heart. Like, he wanted to play in that game. He felt like he could have made a difference. And the thing is, like we talked about it, he got injured in the first series against the Rams in the 2000 playoff game, so he never played in a game where you got Willie Jackson scoring touchdowns, Robert Wilson, Aaron Brooks is torching. The Rams defense was the worst defense in the NFL. I think it might have been one of the worst in history up to that point. Like, Joe Horn in that playoff game, like, if he plays, he's catching 10 for a buck 50 and 3, and he's like, not only he's a legend with the Saints, but he's like a legend, and he like helped them win the first playoff game. So he'd have like exalted status, right? And the Saints, they were close to the playoffs a couple times, but they never got back. And then in 2006, they're back, but he's hurt, and Sean Payton doesn't play him, and it just, the ending was messy with Joe Horn. And I don't blame the guy. Like he had his heart broken twice. Like, you get to the playoffs two times in your career with the Saints, and both times you can't go. Like, I totally got why the Saints released him, but I totally got why he was just, at the end, he was not on good terms with the Saints and Sean Payton to a certain extent.
No doubt. I mean, he played one snap of a playoff game.
And they
threw him the pass, and he didn't catch it, and he got hurt, and that was it. His entire career. You know, that's his playoff. You know, that's his playoff resume. I mean, you remember, you said it well, Ralph. Like, I loved him so much as a Saints fan when he played on the team, and he could just make you laugh with his quotes. You know, I remember Chidi Ahanotu was his defensive end for the Rams, and Joe. This is like 2000, 2001. Saints Rams hated each other, right? They couldn't stand each other. Greatest show on turf. I mean, it was just this great hated rivalry at the time. And Joe Horn would talk a bunch of trash about him. You know, we won 3 or 4. How can they call it a rivalry? And Chidi Ahanotu was like, man, Joe Horn's running his mouth, and he's always talking trash. I'm coming to see him. And the reporters give that quote to Horn, and his response is, who is that? They're like, Chidi Ahanotu. He's like, who is that? Like, he plays for the Rams. He's like, I don't know. Not like the I don't care about him. Like, his tone was like, he just cracked me up. He was funny. He cared about the team. He would catch those big passes where he would, like, his celebration, Ralph, it's like he would start having like a seizure. He would just start like jiggling all over.
I remember
he wouldn't throw the ball. He'd just kind of drop it and then just do this little first down thing. And you remember all that stuff fondly, and I do too. And yet we forget, but we overlook how freaking good he was on the field.
I remember in the 2000 season, the Saints, Aaron Brooks' first start was against the Rams. And Joe Horn didn't have a big, like, if you look at his stats, they're not great in that game. But I remember he drew a pass interference penalty on, I believe it was Todd Light, and he celebrated it like he caught a touchdown. And I remember, I want to say Todd Light wanted to fucking murder him, because it was a big play at like the end of the game, and like Joe Horn like celebrate, like he drew the flag, and I think like it was a clear pass, like it wasn't a clear pass interference. Is one of those where you're like, I don't know, but as a Saints fan, you're like, hell yes, it is. But he celebrated like he caught a pass, and Todd Light wanted to murder him, and that sums up Joe Horn. Like, he made a play in a critical point of the game. Even if the play was drawing a flag, I'm going to celebrate. And it's just like, if he's not on your team, you want to strangle him to death. But if he's on your team, you're like, I love that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fan base loved him. You know, his teammates loved him. And he was a time when receivers kind of had the limelight bigger than any other position in that era. Yeah. And he was able to put the Saints, you know, on. I mean, Ed Warder would always interview him after games, and, you know, Joe would take the mic and say, Ed Warder, like, people liked him. He was in the Pro Bowls. He made big plays, and he was this household name. You know, Chris Berman called him Joe Little Bighorn. You know, Kari on WWL would call him Joe Likes to Toot His Own Horn. He had the Joe Horn Show. You know, he did things at a time when Saints fans were looking for a big personality, not on a losing team, on a winner. And granted, you know, they didn't win in 01.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
You know, they had some 7-9 seasons and an 8-8 season. But that 2000 season and how good he was, because even in the seasons where you're like mediocre, right, that's when you really, I think, latch on to the big bright spots. And he was always one of those bright spots in the Haslett era. I mean, after Katrina, his support in New Orleans and the Gulf region, I mean, he was in a lot of ways the public face of the team during that Katrina season. You know, he would ESPN would focus on him a lot. He would visit evacuees. He would donate time, energy, money.
Yeah, and
to
he was the guy when they went back in 2006. After, I have a soundbite somewhere on an iPod somewhere, where, like, he talked to ESPN and he's like, you know, I'm happy for us, but I'm happy for the fans. We went through a lot as players, but the fans and the city, they went through a lot, and this is for them. I mean, that's who it was. But the thing about Joe Horn is he knew what the media wanted, and he gave it to them. And that's not a bad thing. Like, players, they want to make money off the field. You want, like, Joe Horn understood that Ed Werder or whoever in the national media, they wanted a fun soundbite. Joe Horn understood that after games, right? He gave it to him. Or when the Saints lost, he was mad. He gave it to him then. So, like, and that's not a bad thing. Like, players, I wish players were more like Joe Horn and understood intuitively, like, what the media wanted. Because if you give the media what they want, they'll forgive you and leave you the fuck alone. And just, like, forgive your transgressions if you're nice to them. But if you fuck the media over, when trouble hits, they kill you, you know?
Did you, you know, and then they ask him to take a pay cut, and he doesn't. He goes to the Falcons. How did you feel as a Saints fan, being that, okay, you asked to be released because you didn't want to take the pay cut, but that team, like,
I mean,
and then look, they signed him to a $15 million deal. He only
he got like $8 million. I mean, at the time, I wasn't mad because I, like, looked at it then, and I was like, Joe Horn is old. He's starting to break down. He's had two bumpy years in a row. Like, he's in his mid-30s. Like, it's not going to go well for him. I looked at it as, like, he's stealing $8 million of Arthur Blank's money because he's not going to be any good because he's done. So I wasn't that mad at him. I guess I'd have been more mad, Scott, if it had been, like, Morton Anderson or, like, Joe Horn had left and he had continued to be good. But, like, he was done. It was a fork in him. He was done. So, like, I wasn't that mad about it, and I laugh about it, and, like, me and Kevin Hell fight over it. Like, I'm just like, I got to give it to Joe Horn. He went to Atlanta and stole $8 million of Arthur Blank's money. I think it's the greatest, might be the greatest Saints move to Atlanta ever because he just fucked over the Falcons. So, I wasn't that mad about it. But if he would have played well, I think it would have been different.
So, have you ever had the Bayou 87 barbecue sauce?
I have not. I've heard it's good.
I had it once. He was in Lafayette once at a Rouse's, and he was selling a bunch of it.
I barbecue your ass, in molasses!
Hell yeah. My friend bought, like 10 bottles from him, and I think Joe was holding some contest, like, hey, you know, somebody that buys a bottle, I'll come watch the Super Bowl at your house. My buddy was hoping he'd just show up at his house.
Nice.
That didn't happen. But, he, you know, Joe probably went somewhere. But I remember I got to try it. He had some. It was good. I'll give it to him. You know, like, I'm not exactly a barbecue connoisseur, so I may not be the best judge of it. But you know what?
It depends what you
there's
like.
There's some barbecue sauces I think are gross. I'm like, I don't like how – I just don't like any of it. I put it all over my burger that day, and then I ended up dipping some fries in it. So I'm down with Bayou 87.
The thing about Joe Horn, we'll get two last things, and then we'll get out of here. Is one is, I think his 2004 the 1,399 yards and let's see, 2,000. I want to get it right.
94. I think he had 94 catches. I think he had 11 touchdowns.
94 catches, 11 touchdowns, 1,399 yards, 14.9 a catch. I think it's the greatest receiving season in the history of Saints. I think it's better than Jimmy Graham in 2011. And I think it's better than anything Colson did.
I'm with you there, Ralph.
I mean,
you
know,
statistically it is. And when you consider the Saints' offense didn't have, you know, 100 different elite weapons or, you know, spread it out the way that, say, you know, a Peyton Breeze team would. The point is, you know, there are a lot of teams that got to double that guy. I mean, that guy's carrying a lot of the baggage. On a team that, you know, if Doug Bryan makes a freaking field goal, I'm sorry, I'm getting pissed off thinking about it, with
they
the,
go
with
to
the
playoffs.
Jets and beats the Rams and don't lose an overtime, that Saints team, which was 4-8 at one point, ends up going to the playoffs. But
yeah.
Horn was unbelievable that year. And that was his last great season, you know. I mean, he never played a 16-game season again. That 04 season was his last healthy season, and you saw what he did with it. I mean, I think he averaged like 15 yards a clip.
Yeah, I mean,
I love Joe Horn, man. Like, as a Saints fan, he's one of those guys that, even with that year in Atlanta, and I like the way you phrased it, right? He didn't go there and ball. He kind of just took their money. So we're looking at it wrong if we're a little bitter about it. He's a guy that I think tried and true Saints fans are always going to love.
And the thing about it, too, and we totally forgot this, 2005, look, Sports Illustrated, their website, you can go and you can search their archives and you can read any article they've ever put in their magazine, and it's free, I believe. If you have time, go to their archive and read the story After the Storm from 2005, when the Saints, it was after Katrina, and they opened the year in Carolina. The Joe Horn quotes and him in that story is amazing, because the Saints were winning that whole game in 05, the whole Carolina game. They were winning the entire game, but Carolina comes back and ties it. And Joe Horn is on the sideline, and he is losing his fucking mind. And he is like, we cannot lose this game. We are winning this game. Get me the ball. And he had a play in that game he caught 5 for 65. But he had a play where he looked at Aaron Brooks, and Aaron Brooks looked at him, and they just knew on what the coverage was. It wasn't even audible. Joe Horn runs the route, catches a 25-yard pass. Carney hits the field goal. The Saints win. It's a great story. It's probably the only highlight of 2005, right? But read that story. It just encapsulates to me, Scott, everything we loved about Joe Horn. You'll go to Sports Illustrated, read that story After the Storm, and you'll love fucking Joe Horn all over again.
Hell yeah. Saints Hall of Famer and 87 jersey, if you want to rock one on game day today. You know, it's one of those Saints jerseys, Ralph, that
you can
wear
it
many years later, and it's not only acceptable, it's cool, right? You see someone wearing a retro Horn jersey, you're like, all right, I'm good. Especially the more we get away from it. I mean, it's been over 10 years since he played.
Yeah, it's down. Scott, brother, thanks for joining us again. So people, again, find – give out your Twitter handle. I'm too drunk. I'll butcher it. Give it to the
people. There it is. It's Scott underscore 1420. And you
tell
can
them how
find
to find
me
the think tank on the Great Sports Think Tank. Tell them how to find it.
Great Sports Callers Open Think Tank. Great Scott Show. We ESPN 1420 app. We've got that. You can listen to live programming. Download the ESPN 1420 app. We got stories up there, a lot of Saints stuff. I'm always tweeting out stuff. We got SoundCloud account. You can, you know, anytime I talk to Ralph, I know he retweets stuff there. But, you know, especially when we pick up stuff in Saints season, you know, you and I a couple of months ago had a great topic about, you know, the player that the Saints let leave in free agency that went on to thrive and flourish elsewhere.
We had the best.
We also did. That got our audience going.
We
discussed that for days.
We also did the most famous number one Saints celebrity fan, and I went kind of off the road. I went Ellen as the number one fan. I explained it. I thought, I can't remember how I explained it now, but I explained it pretty well, I think.
I've had too much. Win the Super Bowl, you know, Ellen's going to be there on the field filming bits, you know, part, you know, making it a big thing. You know, Brad Pitt, kind of a Saints fan. I think Ellen's the way to go. I think you can throw Harry Connick Jr. in there.
Hoda Kotb, too.
You know, that's big time there. I think they're probably the biggest celebrity fans. And I love it. I mean, the stuff Ellen did with Drew Brees. Now we're getting off on another topic. Yeah. But I bet you Ellen would rock an 87 horn jersey, right?
Yeah, she would. Ellen might even write. Ellen might rock the Marcus Davenport jersey. But on that note, Scott, British lady, take us out.
Thanks to all of our Saints Happy Hour listeners whose donations made Drunk Saints history possible. Until next time, remember, surviving Saints history is hard. That's why God made alcohol.